Our next case for argument is 21-2088, Henley v. McDonough.
May it please the Court, Kenneth Carpenter appearing on behalf of Ms. Tracy Penley. Ms. Penley's case deals with two questions of interpretation of rules of law created first by this Court in implicit denial, and secondly, the issue exhaustion rule of law. So beginning with the implicit denial rule, the Veterans Court made a clear error of law by affirming the Board's use of the implicit denial rule. The implicit denial rule is, in essence, a notice provision. It requires that there be a basis for a reasonable person to have concluded that there was a decision by the VA on the question of whether or not there was entitlement to a rating based upon unemployability. Ms. Penley never received a rating decision, never received a notice that the VA had ever addressed or decided the question of entitlement to TDIU. As a consequence...
She never received a rating decision?
On TDIU, that's correct.
Oh, on TDIU.
On TDIU, on the issue of TDIU. Obviously, had she, then there would be no implicit denial
rule. She received a rating decision. But it
she
was
did
based on the right hip bursitis.
Right, and the ratings decisions that she received, Your Honor, were dealing with issues of reduction of rating and then ultimately an increase in rating. The first decision was based upon whether or not...
If her TDIU claim was based exclusively on the right hip disability, and if her right disability was adjudicated at only 30% disabling, how could she secure TDIU benefits?
Through 4.16B, Your Honor, by referral to the director for a review as to whether or not her disability alone from...
A 30% disability on a single disability, like rated at 30%, are you telling me that could still result in complete unemployability that she could get benefits?
Yes, Your Honor.
The regulation also points out that, you know, you're not entitled to TDIU absent a finding of a disability rating at 60% or higher.
No, Your Honor. That's under 416A.
Right.
Under 416B, it says at any rating, and that the rating, if it doesn't meet the requirements of A, can be considered, but must be considered by the director of compensation under the provisions of 416B.
So which, even if the right hip was rated at 10%,
correct,
you would still be saying... Well, there needs to be a TDIU consideration.
Yes. Well, not needs to be a consideration, but the director would be responsible for making a determination as to whether or not that 10% rating...
It has to be kicked over to the director every single time there's a rating lower than 60%?
Well, under the case law before the Veterans Court, I believe it now says where there's a reasonable possibility that the condition could have resulted in unemployability.
What would be the theory behind a 10% rating having a, nevertheless a theory for total disability in you know,
well, because you're under
unemployability context?
Many of the diagnostic codes assign ratings for instance, in muscle conditions, movement. And that does not necessarily extend to how that movement would or would not impact an ability to secure or follow substantial gainful occupation.
I thought there's law, case law that says, as a general matter, if you get a rating of less than 100%, then that's also an implicit denial of a rating higher than the rating you've been given, including a TDIU rating. Am I misunderstanding the law?
I cannot, Your Honor, off the top of my head, recall a case that says it
Locklear?
In that fashion.
Locklear doesn't say it like that? As a general matter, when you receive a rating that's less than 100%, that's an implicit denial of a rating higher than the rating you were given, up to 100%, including TDIU. That Locklear doesn't say that, or you don't remember?
Well, I believe there is. No, you're correct. There is language in Locklear that says that. I'm sorry, I thought you were talking about this court's case law.
Well, we're talking about implicit denials, and you know, we ourselves have recognized that you can have implicit denials. And I guess what I'm trying to understand right now is I'm trying to locate what is the legal issue as to this implicit denial question that we have jurisdiction to hear. I was having trouble figuring out, based on your blue brief, what is it that we can actually consider here, given that we're restricted and constrained from considering applications of law to fact.
Well, the question becomes whether or not it was raised before the agency. And if it was raised before the agency, then there should have been a decision. It was not raised, it was raised before the agency, and the board in its decision expressly found, let me get the specific statement, in the board decision on appeal, it said, upon review of the record, the board finds that the veteran's February 1996 application, her original application, raised an informal claim of TDIU. Thus, the board finds the veteran's February 1996 application included a claim for TDIU.
Nobody's disputing that. The question is, what is the legal question that we can review here as to what the board, what the Veterans Court found, which was that there was an implicit denial of the informal TDIU claim.
In order to make that finding, Your Honor, consistent with this court's jurisprudence in both Adams and DeShotel, there has to be a basis for a reasonable person to understand that there was a decision. And in this case, there was no reasonable basis in the record for Ms. Penley to understand that the VA had ever decided the question of TDIU after the board acknowledged that it had been presented. I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Why? That's okay. I'm sorry for interrupting you, but I wanted to make sure I got to ask my question, which is, why isn't that a question of application of law to fact? What you described, which is, you know, saying that, you know, she did not have implicit notice or didn't have notice, why isn't that a question of application of law to fact or a factual question?
Because this is a rule of law, and this court has jurisdiction over rules of law to determine whether or not that rule of law was correctly applied. And in order to be correctly applied under this court's jurisprudence, it must there must be evidence that a reasonable person would have been on notice based upon the notices that were given her during the adjudication that there was a decision that denied her TDIU. And if I could just go over with Your Honor the specific decisions that were made. The decisions that were made in this case are in the record at 41 to 42, February 1997 decision. That decision was on a reduction of rating, and that her claim was denied because she failed to report. The next decision is May of 1997 at pages 43 to 44. That decision was that an evaluation greater than the current rating of 10% was not just denied, but the condition was decreased to 0%. Therefore, at that point, there was no mention of anything that would have inferred a decision on TDIU. And finally, in 1999, the decision was to grant her, from her reduced rating of 0%, a 30% rating. And
in that curiosity, when she was reduced to a 0% rating, do you really read the regulation as permitting a person who is entitled to a 0% rating to also simultaneously get TDIU?
I do, Your Honor.
And
I do.
So
because
zero rating. You have zero disability.
Oh, I'm sorry. I misunderstood the question. When it is reduced to zero, I don't believe there could be a reasonable expectation. But Ms. Penley was challenging that reduction and had challenged the reduction by introducing evidence that that condition had worsened. And there were multiple submissions.
When it was reduced to zero, which it was,
yes.
Why wasn't that an implicit denial of her TDIU as well, since you can't get TDIU when you have zero disability?
Because the claim had not ended. The claim was ongoing as to what the appropriate rating was, and that reduction to zero was corrected by restoring her rating to 30%. And upon the restoration of that, then the issue of TDIU continued to be part and parcel.
So they should have reconsidered the implicit, even if there, are you saying even if there was an implicit denial of TDIU when they rated her at zero, that they should have had to reconsider that when they changed her rating to 30?
Yes, Your Honor. Because the concept here, particularly as it relates to the issue exhaustion question of 3.156B, is whether or not this was a pending claim. And if this was a pending claim from the date of the original claim in January of 1996, then that new evidence, which was never considered, particularly as to the references in the record to her inability to work, which is in Appendix 33, stating that the last date she worked was October of 1995.
So, Mr. Carpenter, it seems like your challenge to me is really one of whether or not there can ever be implicit denial of a TDIU claim. How could there be?
No, Your Honor.
The rule that you would like us to adopt, how could there ever be implicit denial of a TDIU claim?
Respectfully, Your Honor, I'm just asking this court to follow the existing case law, which says that a reasonable person must have been able to understood that there was a denial of TDIU by the VA. No VA rating decision ever did that. No notice that she was ever provided indicated that, so that she or any other reasonable person would be able to determine that TDIU had been denied. I'm sorry, I'm into my rebuttal time. I'd like to reserve the balance.
No problem. Okay, counsel for the government.
May it please the court. I'd like to start with a jurisdictional issue because I believe that this court has squarely addressed the type of argument that appellant just made here at the lectern, which is, at what point does this court have jurisdiction over rule of law issues? And as this court explained in Wilsey, that the distinction is whether the Veterans Court applied the correct rule of law at all, whether it was even eligible for application, in which case this court can review that question. But if the question is how that rule of law was applied, when there is no question that the rule was available and relevant, that is something that is beyond this court's jurisdiction. And as Ms. Penley explained in her briefing and an argument here, that is really the thrust of her argument, that the application of the implicit denial rule, whether or not the notices Ms. Penley received would have put a reasonable person on notice that her TDIU claim had been denied, that is the thrust of her disagreement with the proceedings before the board and the Veterans Court, and that is something this court lacks jurisdiction to review. There are a handful of arguments that theoretically could be within this court's jurisdiction. I just want to quickly address them to make sure that the government's position on those is understood. There is a question, potentially, as to whether implicit denial rule was available at all. That is something that did come out, at least through Ms. Penley's reply brief at page 7, where she said the issue is whether the board erred by implying the implicit denial rule in the first place, not whether the test was applied correctly. But on the main point there, as this court said in Munro, an express discussion of any informal claims is not necessary for a denial. Obviously, a claim can be denied implicitly without an explicit discussion. That's the entire point of the rule. There is also some allusion in Ms. Penley's brief, although not directly. She made this point more directly below to the Veterans Court, that the point that this court made in the Andrews decision in 2016, which was unpublished at 646 Fed Appendix 101, made the point that if VA took the position that there was never an informal claim presented at any point during the proceedings, VA can't then turn around and say, oh, but in fact it was implicitly denied as well.
Why isn't the question of law that Mr. Carpenter is raising on behalf of his client, this question about whether or not any rating less than 100% should automatically be understood to be a decision on TDIU?
That
is a question of law, right?
That could potentially be a question of law, Your Honor.
Because the Veterans Court has held that as a legal principle, and in fact, it's laid out on page 6 and 7 of the opinion in this case. We've never said that. We have never held that as a matter of law, any rating decision that is less than 100% implicitly denies TDIU.
That is correct, Your Honor.
And that is one of his arguments, is it?
That is one argument that could be fairly read from the briefing, Your Honor. And what I would point
that
to...
Where is that in Ms. Penley's briefing?
Well, Your Honor...
They're challenging the Locklear rule.
I don't understand them to be challenging Locklear directly. I think what Ms. Penley was saying, as Chief Judge Moore suggested, was that you cannot interpret this categorically, that there has to be some amount of discretion and flexibility. I believe that that is consistent with the jurisdictional argument the government's making, that here it's a misreading of the Veterans Court decision to say they were applying a categorical rule. The Veterans Court
because
relied...
Is Mr. Carpenter correct in his representation to us about 4.16b, namely that it expressly permits TDIU awards at the director's discretion, even for disabilities that are rated below 60%, say?
It could, Your Honor. And I would point you towards the first decision that's at issue here in the appendix, and that's at Appendix 49 to 51, because I believe if you look at those, you will see that both avenues for TDIU benefits were implicitly addressed and rejected in that decision. So obviously we know the primary basis for TDIU is that you have to have a single disability rated at 60% or a combination of disabilities where one is rated at least 40%.
Okay, slow down. I'm just taking a minute to catch up with you.
Certainly,
Your Honor. What am I looking at 49 through 51?
So starting at Appendix 49,
yes,
we have the rating decision.
Okay, one is this? There were multiple decisions.
So this
right?
is an April 1999 decision, Your Honor. This is the first of the two decisions that both the board and the Veterans Court said constituted the implicit denial. And the implicit claim was raised, or the informal claim was raised in 1996 at the start. So this is the first decision that the board pointed to in stating, here is the first notice that a reasonable person would have understood implicitly denied TDIU. And the board said it's for two reasons, and we can see those reasons right in this document. At 49, it says the rating is 30%. VA also goes out of its way to say we're expressly not giving you a higher 60% rating because, and then describes the symptoms and the reasons why 60% is not present. And so that covers...
But they're not saying we're not giving you 60% because we don't find you're unemployable. We're not giving you 60% because you don't have this femur thing, whatever.
That's correct, Your Honor. But going to your Honor's question about the two paths for TDIU.
Right, but would... So it seems to me that a normal person reading this wouldn't necessarily understand we're giving you 30, we're not giving you 60 for this specific reason as necessarily saying you don't get TDIU.
But to answer Your Honor's question about the alternative path, if you flip to the second page on Appendix 50, it also references here, we have determined that your claim, I'm reading the last sentence at the first paragraph here, we have determined that your claim does not warrant submission to the VA Central Office for extra scheduler rating because there is no evidence of unusual disability factors that preclude application of regular scheduler
and that
standards.
Goes to the heart of 4.16b, right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Which is exactly what they would do that there's a policy that the VA should, when they see reason to, submit something under 60% to the Secretary. And this is an express statement in the rating decision that we've looked and there's nothing special that warrants this extra scheduler consideration and we're not sending it to there. So if his only hook is 4.16B here, which it is, here is a clear statement that you don't qualify under 4.16B.
That is correct, Your Honor.
That's the notice, which is all that's required.
That is correct, Your Honor. And if the court requires even more, we can see that the first page here, Appendix 49, is also discussing the evaluation report that was conducted on December 22nd, 1998, and the preceding pages of the appendix contain that report. And we can see on Appendix 47, there is also discussion of her inability to work.
So, look, you've knocked it out of the park. You can stop talking. But as far as the Locklear thing goes, I am really troubled by this notion that there ought to be some or maybe is, and help me understand this Locklear decision by the Veterans Court and whether or not they're applying it in a way that would really eviscerate the presence of 4.16B because it can't be the case that you have to have a rating that is 100% or even over 60% to potentially be entitled to TDIU. That can't be right because the regulations contradict that concept. Is that what the Locklear case really stands for?
That's not how we understand Locklear, Honor, and I believe Ms. Tendler's briefing is maybe over-reading Locklear and saying that it establishes some sort of categorical rule. The holding of Locklear was something that's actually favorable to veterans, which says that even if you have a notice that might plausibly be understood to deny a TDIU claim, if in the course of that proceeding, VA expressly says, wait a second, we're going to reserve judgment on the TDIU piece, we're going to make that a separate decision, that controls. That was the actual holding of Locklear, that a statement, affirmative statement from VA saying we're going to reserve judgment on TDIU controls, even if there is other evidence that might suggest an implicit denial.
Well, of course, but has Locklear been read subsequently to stand for what a much broader proposition than what you just articulated, which is anything less than 100% is an implicit denial?
Not that we're aware of, Your Honor. And,
okay.
And I also want to point out that even though Locklear was mentioned in the Veterans Court decision here, really the foundation of this decision was Ingram. And Ingram is a case that this court has cited approvingly on multiple occasions as well as taking a fact-intensive approach as appropriate.
Just so I understand, do you agree and recognize the concern that I would have with such an incredibly broad reading of Locklear that anything short of 100% or even anything short of 60% is on its face an implicit denial of TDIU? Do you understand my concern?
Absolutely, Your Honor. And the way that the government understands, again, really Ingram is the foundational decision that Locklear is applying in a specific circumstance, is that Ingram says if you have a prerequisite determination that is decided, that puts someone on notice that any downstream determinations have also been decided. So in that case, though, we were in that 416A category, where we're talking about the only available path to TDIU is a single rating, 60%. And what Ingram said was that that's a prerequisite determination to getting TDIU if you're only in subsection A. And if you don't meet that prerequisite, obviously you're not going to meet the requirements for the subsequent decision of TDIU. But it would be too far, and we would agree, that that does not mean that TDIU, as a blanket rule, is never available simply because there's a specific rating decision that's implemented. Obviously, that would read out the alternative path for TDIU, which is in the regulations.
Okay. Anything further?
I can address the 3.156 argument very briefly if the court prefers. I know it didn't come up in Mr. Carpenter's opening argument. But I would simply point out that the court is misunderstanding Bozeman, obviously, just because
you
an argument...
Need to say anything.
Okay, thank you. Then we'll ask that the court affirm.
Thank you. Mr. Carpenter, you have some rebuttal time.
May it please the court. What the government just did was to offer a post hoc rationalization that was not the basis for the board's holding. What you heard was what was done, or they suggest was done, in the 1999 decision. As I indicated in my opening argument, at Appendix 198, the Veterans Court in the decision, or excuse me, the Board of Veterans Appeals decision of December 11, 2019, expressly found that the Veterans' 1996 application raised an informal claim of TDIU, and thus the Board finds that the Veterans' 1996 application included a claim for TDIU. So it was about what was in the 1996 application, and thereafter, what was in the subsequent rating decisions. The quoted material that is was referred to by the government at page 50 of the appendix applies equally to the language used by the VA in its regulation at 3.321B1. And that is for extra schedule or consideration where the rating schedule does not provide for a rating more than. And so for the veterans, or for the government to get up here and rewrite the board's decision in argument.
I don't think this is at all fair. Look at page 199 and 200 of exactly the document you just pointed us to.
I'm sorry, Your Honor. What was the page?
Page 199 of the appendix and 200, which is exactly the document you just pointed us to, where the board expressly says exactly what the government attorney just argued, which is it goes through implicit denial and it points to exactly the extra scheduler language. It goes through why, since you're only at 30%, not 60, you don't get 4.16A. And then it goes further on the top paragraph of 200 to explain that, moreover, the board determined in that rating decision that you didn't warrant extra scheduler rating.
But, Your Honor, with respect, the term extra scheduler rating is used in 3.321B1 for a completely different purpose. The 3.321B is for extra scheduler consideration when the rating schedule does not meet the symptoms for the veteran's service-connected disability. That's a different type of extra scheduler consideration moved to the same administrative personnel within the VA.
Okay, so you're saying that, so this quote doesn't come from 4.16B.
Correct.
And so you don't think that it represents the government's decision that she was not being given TDIU.
That's correct, Your Honor, because the opening phrase of 4.16B is, it shall be the established policy of the VA to grant TDIU when the requirements of TDIU are met other than on the scheduler basis
set out in A. Did you cite 4.16B in your briefs?
No, Your Honor, I did not. Because the issue is, was she on notice? And it's about the application. This court has jurisdiction because this case is about how the application.
Okay, I just want to make clear, you didn't cite 4.16 here. You did not.
No,
cite
Your Honor,
4.16.
I did not. I did not.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Carpenter and Mr. Weiser. This case is taken under submission.